Hi, this is Melinda Myers, horticulturist, gardening expert, and author. You're listening to CattleCast.
Welcome to another episode of CattleCast, presented by Capital Area District Libraries. It's the podcast that provides a nice mix of information and entertainment.
Welcome to the April edition of CattleCast. I'm Mark Bazita, Library Assistant for Cattle Downtown Lansing, with an episode full of great interviews and information. Meet best-selling author Imbolo Mbue. Pat Taylor will talk about the library's upcoming millage August 7th, and a whole lot more. Congratulations to Christopher Lewis for correctly identifying last month's cattle keyword, history. Christopher wins a four-pack of movie tickets. We'll kick off this episode with author Imbolo Mbue right after this.
The Capital Area Reads Project is encouraging you to read the powerful book, Behold the Dreamers, by Imbolo Mbue. This Oprah's Book Club pick looks at immigration, race, and the American dream. Read the book, then reserve your seat for Imbolo Mbue's April 28th appearance at the Lansing Center by visiting cattle.org. It's Imbolo Mbue, April 28th, 4 p.m. at the Lansing Center. Capital Area District Libraries, everything right here.
Cattle is partnering with MSU's African Studies Center and the Delta Township District Library on the Capital Area Reads Project, encouraging communities to read and discuss the novel Behold the Dreamers by Imbolo Mbue. It's a novel about marriage, immigration, class, race, and the trapdoors in the American dream, the unforgettable story of a struggling Cameroonian immigrant couple and the wealthy Wall Street executive and his family in New York, just as the Great Recession upends the economy. We're delighted to welcome Imbolo to CattleCast. Hello.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. Now, I read that you had never considered a career as a writer, but all of that changed after you visited the library. Explain what happened.
Yes, I never ever considered writing as a career. I never even knew anybody who was a writer. And then one day, in 2002, I went to a library in Falls Church, Virginia, and I saw books, the Oprah Book Club books, on a shelf, and I decided to borrow one of them, Toni Morrison's Song of Solomon. And the moment I finished reading that book, I started writing because I was so inspired by the book and how powerful it was. And that was basically how I started writing, just by reading the great book.
Wow. Now, as a native of Limbe, Cameroon, what did you think of America before immigrating here?
Well, I thought it was this, you know, promised land of sorts, because that is what the impression I got from television and from people who'd been to America and returned with a lot of money and wearing nice clothes and this sense that in America there was really not much poverty and there was a lot of equality, and I really did not have any reason to not believe that. I only started questioning everything when I came here and I saw for myself that as beautiful as the country was, it had its share of struggles. But that is not something which was made known to me when I was growing up or to most people in my country. It wasn't a very common idea.
And how did your first impressions match up with what you'd imagined?
Well, it was very different what I thought, to say the least. I remember when I first came and I was driving and through an inner city neighborhood, and that was the first time in my life that I saw homelessness. It never even occurred to me that there were some people who did not have houses to stay. And I never thought about how hard it is to achieve this American dream. And I never even considered that people had to work long hours and have credit card debts and all kinds of debt. So it was different. It was a bitter pill for me to swallow, thinking that, recognizing that the America I imagined was very different from the America I saw. But there were parts of it that were still wonderful. The part where it was, there were lots of opportunities for people like me, for a young immigrant. I did feel very welcome when I came to America. So there were parts of it that held up, but there were other parts that very much surprised me.
Now, your novel strikes a balance in addressing the pitfalls of the so-called American dream without moralizing these failings. How did you craft that balance?
Well, my intention was to simply tell the story about these two families. I didn't have any sort of agenda to even to write about the American dream per se. I mean, even though this novel has been spoken of as being critical of the American dream, I wanted to simply write about people, about their stories, what it's like to be a working class African immigrant in Harlem, and what it's like to be a wealthy Wall Street executive and their struggles, and what it was like for the families to be living during the financial crisis of 2008. So I moralizing is not what I do. I leave that up to the readers to interpret the story for themselves. But my goal was always to just tell the story honestly and completely.
And what kind of research did you do to write this novel?
Well, I did have to, read a lot about what happened at Lehman Brothers, because the Wall Street executive in the novel, he works at Lehman Brothers. So I had to understand what happened there behind the scenes at Lehman Brothers to give the novel the sense of historical accuracy. But as far as, the characters themselves, the African immigrant characters, I didn't really have to research them because they are from my hometown in Cameroon. And I am an African immigrant myself. I used to live in Harlem, just like the characters in the novel. And I am, and the wealthy family, it was mostly from asking questions about people from that, to people from that world, what their lives were like. But my research mostly had to do with the financial crisis.
And how were you told that your book was picked as an Oprah Book Club selection?
Well, Oprah called me herself.
Really?
I got a call from Oprah. It was about a year ago this time. And she told me that she picked the book. And I told her the story of how I was inspired to start writing after reading an Oprah Book Club selection. And in a way, it was some sort of a circle. I started reading an Oprah Book Club selection. And I wrote a book that became an Oprah Book Club selection. And it meant a lot to me. She is a big supporter of books and of writers, and it was a privilege to have her support.
I'm sure. Well, is it fair to say that your personal story is a great example of the American dream that the immigrant couple in the novel dreamed about?
I think, every story is far more complex than that. I don't think we can, look at the story and say, because people are, I attempted to say that, or they like me to say that, I'm an African immigrant, I came here and I worked hard, and look, I wrote a book and it got me, many opportunities. But I think that there's also the part of the story which, people don't see when they meet me, because, they don't think about the fact that I have struggled a lot in this country, and that I've had my share of failures in this country, and that, every story is more complex and nuanced than that. So I do not... I think that the American dream is a wonderful idea, and I think that there are many people who believe that they live in it, but I do question whether it is truly accessible to everybody.
And finally, tell us, what are you currently reading?
Oh, what am I currently reading? It's funny, I was just reading this book. It actually hasn't come out yet. It's coming out in October. It's called Friday Black by a young writer. His name is Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya. It's a short story collection on race relations in America today. It's pretty powerful and just very, very heart-wrenching to read about what it's like to be a young black person in America today. So that is what I'm reading right now and very much enjoying it.
Well, Mbolo, you will be appearing at the Lansing Center Saturday, April 28th at 4 p.m. for a candid conversation, mm-hmm. along with WILX-TV's Laura Painter. Patrons can reserve a spot for this free event by visiting cattle.org or by calling 517-367-6348. Mbolo, thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you at the Capital Area Reads event.
Thank you, Mark. I'm looking forward to it, too. Thank you.
That's Mbolo Mbue, author of Behold the Dreamers. Cattle would also like to thank Rocku10 Overdrive, WKAR, and WILX-TV10 for their support of Capital Area Reads. My next guest oversees all financial aspects of the library, a position he's held for 16 years. Cattle's Finance Director, Pat Taylor, joins me now on Cattlecast. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you, Mark.
So explain your role as Cattle's Finance Director.
Okay. As Finance Director, I've got functional responsibility for three areas: finance, purchasing, and our facilities group. Although my primary function here is to manage the financial operations of the organization. And among those things are things like what I call all the ings: accounting, budgeting, forecasting, auditing, and financial reporting.
That's a lot. Well, explain a little bit how Cattle is funded. I think there's some probably misconceptions about it, but give us the rundown.
Well, Cattle is primarily funded through a property tax millage that is levied every 4 years. Current rate is 1.56 mils. About 87% of our revenue comes in through that mechanism. We also have smaller revenue streams. Those would include things like penal fines, state aid, fines and fees that the library collects, and then other various sources of revenue to things like donations, interest, and other miscellaneous smaller amounts.
So tell us, what roles do the local municipalities play in the operations of our branches?
We have service agreements with all of our municipalities, so their responsibility as part of that service agreement is to provide the facility itself and the maintenance of that facility. And our role, of course, is to provide all of the services that are provided out of that facility. So that includes all the materials, the staffing, furniture and equipment, all the programming that we do, just about everything else that happens inside the building besides the maintenance.
We've talked here many times about the great Cattle resources that are available. How much can a family save by using Cattle?
Well, actually, a family can save an unlimited amount of money, Mark, depending on how much they use. But on average, a family is taking out one item per week, for example, will save between $700 and $800 annually based on foregoing the cost to have to purchase those items. The average taxpayer in Ingham County who is supporting the library is paying somewhere between $70 and $80 annually to support the library. So if you look at it from that standpoint, their taxes of $70 or $80 are bringing a return to them of $700 to $800 in library service value, a return of 10 to 1 on their money, which is really fantastic.
You mentioned earlier about the funding coming through from the millage. Talk about Cattle's upcoming millage on Tuesday, August 7th.
We have a renewal of 1.56 mils. Will be happening in August, like you mentioned. This is the same rate that we've asked the taxpayers for since 2006. So it's something that actually we're very proud of, the fact that we've been able to hold our millage rate steady for the past 12 years and have not had to ask the taxpayers for more funding to run our operations.
Very impressive, and especially in tough times, a lot of credit goes to you for that, so thank you for all of that. More information about the millage will be available on our website, cattle.org, and in all of our branches real soon. Pat, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
It's an exciting time for Capital Area District Libraries. They are celebrating 20 years of service in Ingham County, and I'm here with local history specialist Heidi Butler talking about the library's local history services.
That's right, Stephanie. Capital Area District Libraries' local history services include collections housed at our branches, a dedicated website, and librarian assistance.
Heidi, can you tell us more about the collections?
The collections cover Ingham County history, as well as some surrounding areas and general Michigan history. Patrons can access yearbooks, city records, vintage photographs, postcards, and property records.
So would I be able to trace the history of my home?
Definitely. Our records, in combination with a search in county assessor and register of deeds records, will reveal the age of a home, original features, ownership history, and more. To get started, visit cattle.org/LH.
All right. Sounds good, Heidi. Thank you so much for the great information. And don't forget that you can get started in finding out more about the Capital Area District Library's local history services by visiting their website at cadl.org/LH.
Melissa Cole is the head librarian at Cattle's South Lansing branch. She joins us here on Cattlecast now to talk about some of Cattle's free resources for raising readers and also about the upcoming baby fair at the Lansing Center. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
Cattle has numerous resources for parents and children to help raise readers. Tell us about some of those things, including backpacks and beanstack and all that good stuff.
Well, we have backpacks, which are themed, and they contain a toy, a book, sometimes a music CD. They have examples of finger plays and songs and counting activities. They're really nice. People can check them out and take them home, and it's like a story time in a bag that they can have for their kids, or if it's just they want to do them as individual activities, they can. It's a really fantastic resource. I think we have over 50 of them.
Yeah, a growing number of them, right?
Huge. They keep adding, so I keep losing track.
They're really popular.
They're super popular. At South Lansing right now, we don't have any on the shelf, and that's usually how it is.
That's great.
We also have Beanstack for summer reading program right now, but you can actually use it all year round. You can keep track of reading. It has curated book lists, and you can write reviews on it. It's a fantastic resource for kids. We also have Tumble Books. It's picture books that are read to, or you can read along with them. There's games and puzzles. There's a small collection of books in other languages like French and Spanish, and you can also create playlists on there. We also, a resource that we have that I'm a huge fan of, is our Story Times. And yes, in our Story Times, we promote early literacy, and we have lots of fantastic story times, not just at South Lansing, across the system.
All the branches, right.
Yeah.
Now, there's a portion of the Cattle website with expert advice and reader recommendations, especially for young children. It's cattle.org/raising readers. What can people find on that site?
On that site, they can find links to BookFlix, Tumble Books, and Beanstack. There's also links to the Early Literacy Calendar, which was put together the School Readiness Committee, and it's a fantastic resource. It's one of my favorite resources. It's a calendar that has different activities on each day, and each month is themed, that you can do with your child to promote early literacy. And one of the super fantastic things about it is that there's no dates on it, so you can fill in the date, so it can be used any year.
For any month.
Yeah,
that's perfect.
You can start at any time. Yeah, and we also have our story time schedule on there as well.
And, you know, we keep hearing how birth to five is such a critical age.
To
get kids started reading and liking and feeling books and all of that at a very young age is so important.
A lot of people don't know that you can start from birth reading to your child. You may think that they don't understand, which, you know, more than likely they don't understand, but they get other things from being read to as a baby. You can create a strong bond with your child. It offers cuddling time. They can focus on faces and bright colors and contrasting patterns and things like that. It also, you know, introduces concepts like colors and shapes and the alphabet, a million things. I could go on.
Tell us a little bit about the Raising Reader iPads that are available at some of the branches.
iPads are preloaded with apps that have been curated to promote early literacy practices like singing, talking, reading, writing, and playing.
Okay. Kids can come in and just with their parents and just go right on those iPads?
And actually, they don't usually even need their parents. They know what they are. They go right up to them. They know what their favorite games are. And, you know, we do see parents and children interacting, which we love, and that's important during screen time. Kids are so tech savvy. They already know what they're doing.
Sometimes more than mom and dad do, right?
I know. And there's some pretty fun ones on there. I have to admit, I have played with the Hungry Little Caterpillar app quite a few times.
Now, Cattle will be at the Greater Lansing Baby Fair, which is coming up on Sunday, April 22nd from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Lansing Center. What are some of the things people can see if they attend this event?
Well, the Greater Lansing Baby Fair is an event that strives to be a comprehensive resource for all things baby and toddler. Activities for kids 0 to 6, workshops for parents and caregivers, shopping with local businesses, connecting with area resources, giveaways, indoor prizes, free swag bags for the first 250 families. And the swag bags are pretty nice. They're filled with lots of, you know, goodies and good stuff. And cattle donated, you know, something nice in there too.
Yeah.
There's many attractions. They have the Daddy Den, which has programming for dads. And new this year is the Daddy Daughter Hair Factory, which is going to do basics of hair care and braiding. So it's going to teach fathers how to, you know, take care of their child's hair and do braids. There's the Healthy Habits, which includes ways to keep your family healthy. This year, they're going to have the Australian chef, Paul Penny. He'll do a cooking demonstration, and that's sponsored by Blue Cross Complete. And Cattle and WKAR are going to be at the Kids Corner. We'll be there to promote early literacy from birth. There's going to be 5 stations that show you how to promote early literacy at home, and they're actually going to be based on the 5 practices that we talked about earlier, along with information and resources from the library, Story Times with Curious George and Lexi, the library cat. We'll also have our PlaySpace kits and Raising Reader backpacks. And we're also sponsoring Wanda Deegan on the main stage, and she's pretty fantastic. If you haven't seen her, there's also going to be Psy Studio Music and McCartney Irish Dancers on the main stage. There's also Mid-Michigan Baby Wares, Rock and Rest, support from La Leche League of East Lansing. You can, at the Rock and Rest station, you can rest, change diaper, feed your baby. At Safety Central, there's going to be the Lansing Fire Department, the Lansing Police Department, and they're going to do car seat safety checks, and it's about how to keep your family safe. And Self-Care Space, they're going to have massage and estheticians to talk about how parents can do self-care.
Sure.
Because, you know, when you have a baby, you get so involved in the baby, you forget about yourself. We need care, too.
Absolutely. A great afternoon. Sunday, April 22nd, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Lansing Center. For more information, people can visit lansingbabyfair.com. And for the free library resources, just visit cattle.org/raisingreaders. Now, one last thing, Melissa, before we go, can you give us this month's cattle keyword?
Baby.
Baby. Yes. All right, there it is. So email that word, baby, along with your name and phone number to connect@cadl.org. That's connect@cadl.org. Melissa, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
To celebrate Capital Area District Library's 20th birthday, we're giving CattleCast listeners a chance to win great prizes like a Kindle Fire or a pair of tickets to see The Lion King. Just listen for the special keyword during new episodes of CattleCast. When you hear it, email it to connect@cadl.org along with your contact information. Winners will be announced during the following month's episode. Each month a new keyword will be announced, so keep listening to the CattleCast podcast.
Starting April 19th, Riverwalk Theater will be presenting Bud, Not Buddy, which is based on the book by Christopher Paul Curtis. We are pleased to have the director, Tom Ferris, with us on CattleCast. Hello, Tom.
Good afternoon.
So first, tell us a little bit about Riverwalk Theater.
Riverwalk Theater is the home of Community Circle Players. The organization started in 1958, and we've been at the Okemos Barn Theater, and about 1988, we moved down to Riverwalk Theater. And I've been with the organization ever since I've been in high school.
Wow.
So it's been a real experience for me to be
it's
down there.
Hard to believe it's been that long.
Yes, 30 years at Riverwalk Theater now, and we'll celebrate our 30th season coming up.
Yeah. Now, for those who haven't read the book, Bud, Not Buddy, give us an overview of the story.
Well, this is a tremendous story written by Christopher Paul Curtis. It's the story of an orphan who grows up in Flint. He becomes an orphan at age 6, and the story picks up when it's age 10. He's going to try to find his father. His mother left him a few clues. He has some stones, I guess some writing on them. He has a picture of a young girl on a horse, and he has a flyer from this traveling regional bands. Those were the kind of bands that traveled across the Midwest during the 1930s. It plays an important part of this story. He sees this flyer. He decides that the man who's on the flyer has to be his father. So he makes up his mind. He is going to go find his father, and he sets off across the state of Michigan, fleeing from foster homes and fleeing from the orphanage, along with his best friend, Bugs. And they're going to try to either hop trains or walk or find their way to Grand Rapids or Chicago or someplace to try to find his father.
And how neat that it has a Michigan connection, too.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it is just amazing. He encounters all kinds of adventures as he eventually ends up walking or hitching a ride to Grand Rapids.
Right. Why did Riverwalk decide to bring this story to the stage?
Well, Riverwalk Theater has a mission to provide a variety of experiences for our audiences and for the folks that would like to become involved in doing productions. We'd like to say there's a role for you at Riverwalk Theater, whether it's an audience or participating. And this play offers all kinds of opportunities for that. First of all, it's almost an entirely African-American cast, and we wanted to be able to provide those kinds of opportunities for African-Americans to become involved on the stage. And so that was an important part. But it also has a cast ranging from age 8 all the way to 80. And so it's just a tremendous chance for them to interact together and for the kids to see that there is something to an avocation in life to be part of the theater, and for the adults to see how talented these kids are and to work with them through this. It presents such a great story. It presents opportunities for people to become involved with theater. And it also presents a good opportunity for us to reach out to schools, since this book is something that the schools have involved with their curriculum.
Right. And because it's been such a required reading for so many students, they're going to be familiar with the work already.
Yes.
And then get to see the play version.
Yes, it'll come to life for them, I hope.
Absolutely. Well, I understand that Christopher Paul Curtis will actually be appearing at Riverwalk.
Yes, tremendous. We had an opportunity to meet him at the Flint Literary Conference last July. I took a couple of cast members up, and he was just tremendous. He interacted with the kids, answered all of their questions about the book itself. Then when we asked him, would he like to come see the play, to our surprise, he said, yes, he is coming to Riverwalk, and great time for him to talk to kids. We've got him arranged to make presentations at area schools, and then he'll provide a talk back in that after that evening performance, and we have a reception for him. It also serves as a fundraiser for Reading is Fundamental, which is an important program for the Lansing schools that provide free books to all kids.
Well, how can people get tickets?
Well, tickets are available from our box office by either going on our website, www.riverwalktheatre.com, and theater is spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E, or by calling our box office, 517-482-5700.
And we should mention that Christopher Paul Curtis will not necessarily be at every performance, right?
Oh, that's right. He'll only be at the April 20th reception and performance. Because of his demanding schedule, he has a new book coming out. We're pleased he was willing to spend at least a day with us.
And I can imagine how excited the entire cast and you must be to have the author of the work in the audience.
That's correct. Now, I do want to point out the play was adapted by Reginald Andre Jackson. He is actually the author of the play, and he did a great job of taking the book. I've read both the book and the play, and he did a great job getting the message and the quality of the show through.
Wow. Bud Not Buddy at Riverwalk Theater, located at 228 Museum Drive in Lansing, April 19th through the 22nd, and then again April 26th through the 29th. All right. And of course, we should mention copies of the book are available through Capitol Area District Libraries. Tom Ferris, thanks for joining us, and best of luck on the production.
Well, thank you.
We're continuing our 20th series with a horticulturalist, author, host, and columnist whose books like The Midwest Gardener's Handbook, Small Space Gardening, and Michigan Month by Month Gardening have made her a go-to favorite for gardeners and growers. Without further introduction, here is author Melinda Myers. Melinda, welcome to Cattlecast.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here. It's always a pleasure to talk books, and especially books about gardening and with gardeners and folks like you who make me feel so welcome.
Absolutely. Well, we're glad to have you with us. So tell us a little bit about your great courses series, How to Grow Anything, Gardening for Everyone. How did this project come about?
Well, it's really very interesting. Great courses. I remember getting the catalog 30 years ago, and I called them up and said, you need to hire me to do a class on gardening. And they go, we don't do that. Well, fast forward, they went to my website. They saw I had taught in a university and a technical college, and they invited me to audition. So they flew me out to Washington, D.C. I had to do a couple of on-camera classes.
Oh.
And then that led to the 4 DVDs. We did the first two in Washington, which is crazy, or the Virginia area, because I live in Wisconsin. Uh-huh. And so I'd fly out once a month, and we did, planting the garden. We had a small space and a large space, and then I'd go back another month. So here are gardens I'm helping to plan with gardeners, but I'm only seeing them once a month. Mm-hmm. And it was great. So we showed containers in small and large spaces, how to design your landscape. The next two, they agreed with me that doing it in Wisconsin would be easier. But if you all remember when the polar vortex settled on us,
yes,
in the upper Midwest, that was the year we were doing trees and shrubs and food gardening for everyone. So they'd call in January, what have you shot today? And I'm like, nothing. It's 19 below, real 19 below, not wind chill, and 3 feet of snow. So it was one of those years where, so typical upper Midwest that you get here in Michigan. It's cold winters, late springs, you're mm-hmm. waiting for the season to break, snow in May, which is not normal every year, but not unusual.
Right.
And so I had to laugh. I'm like, well, I got what I asked for, but the weather's not cooperating.
Oh, wow. Well, has gardening always been your passion, or did you have other career paths that you were going to pursue?
You know, that's a really interesting question. My dad grew up on a farm, so I, you know, we'd go visit my grandparents, and I'd pick, you know, raspberries with my grandma, go morel mushroom hunting, do those things. Mm-hmm. My dad always had a garden but didn't let us in, so maybe that's the key to getting your kids to like it. And then he went to Bangladesh to help teach people how to build pumps, and so he gave directions. He wrote a book, basically, for my mom and I, how to plant and get it ready for when he came back. And then I was growing house plants because that was the trend in the 70s. Went to college and was looking at engineering. My dad always wanted an engineer, and I was good at math and science, mm-hmm. pre-med, but I never cut up a frog, so like I'm going to cut up a person. And I love plants, but I like people. And so horticulture just seemed a great way to put practical applied science and then teaching that passion to people. And I was lucky that halfway through my, you know, undergrad, I discovered horticulture was the career path mm-hmm. for me.
Well, now, do you have a favorite flower or plant to grow? I mean, fruits, vegetables, any
you
of
know,
that?
You know, when I was teaching, I'd always make my students introduce themselves and tell me their favorite plant. And they go, what's yours? And I'm like, well, I like this perennial, this tree. I love growing vegetables and fruit. Now I have a little more space. I lived in the city for about 30-some years. And so I had a small city lot and could do a lot in containers in my small lot. Mm-hmm. But now I have more space. So I can grow fruit trees and more berry plants and vegetables. But I also love flowers to bring in the humming. Birds and butterflies, and trees and shrubs are the foundation, and they're the power and the majesty of our landscape. So I can ask you your favorite, but I'll never tell you mine because yeah. I like this one and that one and that one.
Well, and they can change probably too from, I mean, even season to season, I suppose.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And then there's so many new introductions that, you know, you have to try that new flower. And, you know, when you go to the garden center in the spring, I think we're all alike. You have your list if you planned. And then you go, oh, that's really cool. I need that. Oh, that's on sale. I'm sure I can find a spot for that one too.
Yeah. Well, give us some basic tips and tricks that every gardener needs to know. Gardening 101.
You know, the main thing is soil, and it's not glamorous. You know, it's the foundation for your garden. So building healthy soil means a healthy garden, fewer pest problems, more produce if it's vegetables, better flowers. And so that means taking your soil and adding compost or other organic matter, because most of us don't have good soil to start with. It's disturbed. You know, they scraped off the topsoil when they built our house, dug the basement, spread that, maybe put an inch of topsoil and called it a landscape, and we're trying to fix that. Mm-hmm. I've been doing a lot of different kinds of soil prep, lasagna gardening, so you layer newspaper cardboard on the base, then 8 to 10 inches of like grass clippings, no weed killer, annual weeds that haven't gone to seed, shredded leaves, then put a little compost and fertilizer, layer it to be about 18 or 24 inches, and you can plant right away. So it's like sheet composting, and I know you have Pat Lanza's book, Lasagna Gardening, in the library. Check it out. But it's a great way to build soil. I had great produce. I have sandy soil now and rocks, and I was able to have great produce, hardly any weeds, and this garden's been producing for a few years. And so that's a great way to build your soil with all those resources we tend to try to find a way to get rid of, mm-hmm. keep them on your landscape, and create great garden soil.
And in a way, a form of, I mean, is it considered recycling and
exactly.
environmental?
Very sustainable. And so, you know, instead of raking your leaves to the curb to be hauled away, you're raking them in and grabbing them from your neighbors as well.
Well, which of your many jobs have you found to be the most fulfilling? I mean, you've got, you know, gardening expert, you've got TV and radio, instruction, author, columnist, all of that.
You know, I'm an educator, first and foremost. When I was the assistant city forester in Milwaukee, they all made fun of me because every time I would manage my team or deal with engineers about, you know, we can't move that big tree for that light post because you can't put a tree that's 12 inches in diameter in the same spot because they start out little. And they always said, you're always teaching. And that's really what I am. So I look at TV and radio as one way to reach people. Classroom and lectures is another classroom. So everything I do is really educating. It's just a different type of classroom and a way to reach people. Books, I always tell people, for me, writing books, the best part is when they're done and I get to meet people
right.
who buy them, because writing is very solitary, and some people like that. I'm such a people person. I want to share what I know, so I'm happy to write it down, but I like even better when I can hand you the book and we can talk.
Absolutely. Well, and can you give us any upcoming projects that you're working on? Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Well, we just finished. I'm putting the finishing touches on the 2018 Melinda's Garden Moment series, and we did some cool things. We did Hugel Culture Garden, which is kind of a step up from lasagna gardening, taking branches and logs and mimicking what happens in the woods in your garden so that you get 10, 15, or 20 years of benefit from it. And so whether you, hopefully I air in your area, the Melinda's Garden Moment segments, but if not, you can go to my website, melindamyers.com, and view them there once they air on TV. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited because we have new episodes there, and we just redid our website a year in progress, you know, took a year, but we're putting the final, it's open, we want to get feedback. There's still little bugs. I think there are always bugs in websites,
sure.
aren't
oh,
there?
Absolutely.
So trying to work through those, but hopefully made it easier for people to find information, and we're adding new information all the time. So we've really focused a lot on that website as well as the next season of Melinda's Garden Moments.
Sounds very exciting. And you mentioned, you know, staying in touch with people. Is the website the best place? I mean, can people communicate with you through
you
that
bet.
Site?
And just be patient because I'm outnumbered. But if you go to info@melindamyers.com, that's a great way to get through. And there's information about my books and the Great Courses DVDs and frequently asked questions. And we've got video and audio tips as well. And podcasts from years ago, but on some basic gardening that I think you'll find useful.
Melinda, thank you so much for all your gardening tips and tricks and spending some time with us today.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
That's Melinda Myers, author of the Midwest Gardener's Handbook, How to Grow Anything and More, many of which are available to borrow from our catalog at cadl.org. Thanks for joining us for another episode of CattleCast. Remember to email the cattle keyword baby to connect@cattle.org for a chance to win a great prize. Also look for millage information on our website and in our branches real soon. The election is August 7th. See you next time for another episode of CattleCast.